Welcome, everybody, to the Lonely TARDIS, your journey through space and time, lords. Not meant to be a question, but it sounded like one. Anyways, you are joining four wonderful companions to the one, the only, the Doctor Who on this wonderful podcast. And this week we're going to discuss Heaven Sent, Series 9, Episode 11 of this show. I am Dolly Domofsky. Joining me, as usual. I say that a lot, as usual. I'm going to start with Sean Norton.
Hello.
Marcus Beer.
Hello. Woo-hoo, yeah, let's get that energy going up to Dolly's
yes. Left. Woo! That's what I'm talking about.
Inhaling Red Bull and coffee and cocaine.
Lots of cocaine. And Steven Strum.
This one goes to all the cats out there that were saved and fed to make this podcast happen tonight, to fuel this podcast.
It almost makes me want to sing to somebody.
No.
What kind of song would you sing, Sean?
It'd have to be something happy, you know, something upbeat, maybe a celebration song, you know.
Maybe if there was some momentous occasion, maybe like a birthday or something like that.
Yeah, maybe. Well, I guess we'll have to see where we're at by the end here.
Yeah. I mean, we got a lot to talk about ahead of us, I'm sure.
We do.
Let's talk on and talk about the you know, what's going on. One, we've got a hell of a episode to discuss. Video
this morning. Yes, and we got the great video this morning. Great point. Let's start with that. It'll be a little bit of the news we talk to. Breaking this morning on Facebook, one Peter Jackson posted a video of he and his daughter kind of just sitting around his dinner table, dining table, polishing his Oscars, and in strolls one Peter Capaldi. Actually, I should say in strolls the 12th Doctor. Hands Mr. Jackson an envelope, says the BBC is looking for him, and then Mr. Jackson runs off and says, oh yeah, The Walking Dead is on, and they walk away. So did you guys catch that video?
No, I didn't.
Wait, you didn't catch it, Steven?
No, I mean, I knew what happened. I didn't watch the video itself, though.
Okay, yeah.
Oh, you should have. It's fun.
Yeah, much like
if you actually logged into Facebook more than once every 8 months.
I literally just the other day was thinking I should delete Facebook.
Well, Steve, it was picked up on a couple of different sites too. But actually, look, you probably had a busy day.
Some of us have jobs that we have to do for the betterment. I actually did have like a lot.
I have a career. I don't have a job, Steve.
I had a pretty busy day. I was reviewing Just Cause 3 and Xenoblade Chronicles at the exact same time. And boy, let me tell you, Just Cause 3 is broken. Anyway.
Boy.
But Peter Jackson.
That was a bad joke. Mm-hmm. Let me tell you, Just Cause 3 is broken. Peter Jackson, yes. So this has been rumored.
Also, Facebook of all places.
Yeah, huh? Really weird. It was kind of rumored, and I think some fans had brought it up that would be cool to have Peter Jackson direct an episode of Doctor Who. After watching this video and seeing the Hobbit movies, Peter Jackson rambles a long time before he finally gets to the point of what he's trying to say. And this video cemented the fact that I don't know if I trust Peter Jackson with Doctor Who.
Yeah, I mean, they say, you know, he's going to be coming on for an episode or a two-parter or whatever, but by, you know, like, as we get closer to the release date, the two-parter is going to become a three-parter, it's going to become a four-parter, it's going to become the whole season plus a four-hour Christmas special.
Yeah, yep. And then there'll be a prequel series.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I don't know where he's going to find time to do all of this while he's, like, producing The Silmarillion into nine different movies. I just seriously think.
Well, and which of the 2-point-something billion doctors is he going to choose as the main doctor?
Legolas.
Legolas. Mm-hmm. Legolas is the 439 millionth incarnation of the doctor.
Mm-hmm. That's why I look so young. Yeah. They just get younger every year.
They just get younger every year, and we get older.
Well, I mean,
terrible. this would cause me to literally regenerate into Marcus's bad attitude made flesh.
We'd have two Marcuses.
So what do you guys think? I mean, I think it's a neat idea, but I'm not necessarily sold. But who knows? I don't know. This isn't confirmed, right? This isn't official. Sean, you brought that up. Marcus, you said the same thing. It's not official or anything, but there was a Dalek chasing
practically official. I mean, yeah. You don't put Capaldi in the living room.
Nobody puts Capaldi in the living room.
Unless, you know. But I think Marcus made some good theoretical points earlier, too, about whether or not it could be like a one-off movie or multiple episodes or something like that. I don't know. I think it's going to be cool, but I'm very curious to see how much he actually gets to do.
I wouldn't mind like a two-hour special. Yeah, one-off movie, two-hour special that much like what David Tennant was doing. And again, this could be one of those things that manifests into one of the rumors that manifests into the next season being a series of these bigger events rather than 10 or 12 episodes. So maybe Peter Jackson is one of these.
It will be very interesting to see if he doesn't get, a movie length necessarily, but has to work within, the constraints of an episode or a two-parter.
That might be good.
I'd love to kind of see him forced to put his talents to work versus, the BBC being like, oh, well, all right, here you go, Hobbit guy. Here's your budget and go make a movie.
My thing with this is that I just, like, we talk about, like, oh, Peter Jackson's just going to come in here and he's going to want to do a two-part episode or he's going to want to do a weird special or whatever. But, like, I'm sure, like, I mean, obviously he's just wrapped up The Hobbit and everything like that, so he's maybe, not doing anything directly yet. But I'm sure Peter Jackson is a very busy guy. I have to wonder if he even has time to sit around and do a whole bunch of Doctor Who shit.
They did say it was 12 days they'd need him for, right? That was what was mentioned, at least in the video.
And look, he's a huge Doctor Who fan.
Yeah.
He wants to do it. Him and Moffat have been talking. If it's going to, I think it's going to happen. I think 12 days for him, I mean, that's a trip up to Cardiff. I mean, I think it's going to happen. Mm-hmm. I think we'll see a Day of the Doctor type special because it's a huge thing, and we have heard rumors that there is is there a full season next year, is there specials? I mean, they will, and if it's something that's going to be really good and they're going to pump some money in, perhaps they will, instead of being two episodes, they'll do a 90-minute special and have a budget of two episodes because that'll be an event. So we'll see.
I'd be super happy to see that. I mean, the other thing too is that everybody talks about this, like, he's the Hobbit guy, he's the Lord of the Rings guy, but, like, he, and I'm sure everybody knows this, but it's just, we don't always think of it. He, before that, was, like, kind of a schlock, sci-fi fantasy kind of guy with, like, Dead Alive and whatnot, but, like, The Frighteners is a sort of, it's a very different kind of thing, but, like, The Frighteners kind of has that, and to all of his other work before that, has that kind of weird, like, mix of, like, horror and comedy that, kind of fits well with the Doctor Who episode. You want to have a character, some good banter, some good dialogue and stuff like that. Peter Jackson has definitely done that in the past on a small scale.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it could be good, it could be bad. We don't know. I would suggest everybody take a look at that video and, and hopefully get hyped up a little bit that at least we do know that there's more Doctor Who fun upcoming in the following, next year. So, but before we get to next year, we should dive into this episode because what a doozy this episode was. Let me just say right away, this episode, Heaven Sent, summarize it as best I can, was a mind fuck. Does that, it probably puts us in the R rating for the podcast, but
because we never seen this podcast.
Right. Yeah, we definitely never sworn. But family friendly show. Yeah. So I'll just read the brief synopsis from BBC America, which says, trapped in a world unlike any other he has seen, the Doctor faces the greatest challenge of his many lives. That's a hint. One final test, and he must face it alone. Pursued by the fearsome creature known only as the Veil, he must attempt the impossible. If he makes it through, Gallifrey is waiting. Okay, so that does kind of spoil the episode a little bit with the mention.
I would take off kinda.
Yeah, exactly. But so that's the summary right there. And of course, this episode picks up right after Clara, faced the Raven last episode. So let's let's just dive right in, because there's a lot to chew on. Big revelations is that there's a couple billion doctors. It just keeps getting rebuilt, recopied, off a hard drive. And he breaks through, obviously breaks on through the other side to Gallifrey. So who wants to go first?
I don't necessarily need to share my thoughts first, but I did have a question for other people here that I'm just wondering if I missed this, or because there were a couple of spots where I couldn't quite just because of the, you know, whatever the compression on my TV or the episode or whatever, couldn't quite understand what he was saying at certain times. Why did the big crystal diamond thing not reset like the rest of the castle? Did they say that? Did they ever explain?
I don't know if they necessarily explained it, but it did seem like that was the only constant. Like the castle was resetting, but that wasn't a part of the castle.
Yeah, I mean, the other thing was that the skulls weren't resetting. So, I mean, it was inside the castle.
Outside the walls.
Yeah, and the idea being that it was the doctor's confession dial.
Yeah.
And, you know, either he would confess, or he would be trapped there until he could break through the wall.
Okay.
That's my understanding of it.
I need to go back and watch the episode again, maybe hear.
Yeah, you're not wrong, actually, about the audio mix on this episode. It was fucking atrocious.
I'm glad that I'm not the only one.
Yeah, it was the music was just going over, and it's happened a couple of times this season. I don't know what's going on with it. I don't think it's a BBC America only thing. I think, you know, I've seen it on a number of British sites too. That there's obviously some problem with the audio mixing. I don't know whether they're catering to a certain type of television, or there's a tweak in the broadcast frequency or something in the UK now, or however they're recording it. But it's happened a few times, and that needs to be sorted.
Yeah, especially in this episode where it's just, you know, it's not like super, obviously it's not dialogue heavy at all, because there's no dialogue, it's just the doctor kind of talking to himself, but everything that we know, we learn, you know, through dialogue, because he has to say it out loud to explain it to us, so, I don't know, I felt like there were gaps there, maybe, so that's why I assumed that, like, maybe I just missed a line about the crystal or whatever, but yeah, I totally buy the idea of the crystal just being like, well, that's the exit, so, like, that's just not part of it, or that, you know, that's not part of the castle, or something along those lines. So, but I just was wondering if I had maybe missed something. But, what an episode. Like, what the hell? Like, yeah, like the doctor kills himself untold billions of times to, you know, knock himself free out of this place, and we, you know, see him do it to himself. We see him, Thomas Riker himself, for all the Star Trek fans out there, like a whole bunch of times. And this was probably the best episode of Capaldi's era yet.
I think so. The episode was almost 100% Capaldi.
I mean, absolutely, yeah. Like, if we were talking about, like, burning up Clara to give Capaldi, like, the booster rocket that he needed, like, in the last this season. I mean, like, that's basically...
Wonderful analogy, Peter, Steven. Yep, Peter Strum.
Peter Strum. I am the transporter clone of Steven Strum. I burned myself alive to allow myself to continue on through the diamond wall. Yeah, it was just really good. It was just like, that was the first time, like, you know, we had finally used up all the juice that Clara had left, and we were just left with Capaldi now, and he had to stand on his own, and this was kind of like, I think that was almost intentional to a degree. I think it was kind of like, because it very much did feel to me like this whole season has been about, like, because last season was very much like Clara was kind of holding the show together.
Right.
Yep. Because Capaldi hadn't found his footing and the script wasn't doing him any favors. And then this year she, you know, he kind of just, you know, soaked up her heat and used it. And then, like, at the end here, but it felt very much like the producers were saying, like, look, this is our moment that we're going to prove to you that Peter Capaldi is the doctor. And, you know, we've done it a couple times before. Yeah, there have been flashes, there have been speeches, but now here's going to be Peter Capaldi standing entirely on his own two feet, and it was pretty damn good at it. And we finally got to see Gallifrey, which we've been wanting for a while.
It took a long time to get there since the time of the Doctor, or Day of the Doctor, whatever that was, the 50th. But I agree, Stephen. not only was this the best of these last two seasons, I think to me personally, this may be my favorite Doctor Who moment of New Who, just this episode alone. I think plot-wise, everything, I hate to say full circle because a lot of circular imagery in this episode, but I think overall it was excellent, solid from the very beginning to the end, and you know right away that something is amiss. When the Doctor jumps out of the window and climbs out, and they're in that little study in that near that fireplace is a fire pit with, surprisingly, there's Doctor's clothes there. They're the clothes from the previous Doctor. So that was there just, a day before. So I thought it was fantastic. It was, to me, it was easy enough to follow, yet it had plenty of drama and I don't say drama, but plenty of things to figure out along the way. Why is the veil following him? How do you get the veil to stop? Where is this? Oh, we're no longer in, we're actually not in quote unquote reality. We're in his dial. That's his supposed will and testament is now, it's his truths, right? And so I thought that was wonderful. And then the whole idea of the hybrid at the end, I thought was cool because it was kind of like a red hair. Would you call it a MacGuffin throughout the entire the season? Oh, there's a hybrid at the very end.
It absolutely is. It's the bad wolf.
Exactly. He's like, there's no hybrid. It's just, I'm going to fucking ruin Gallifrey.
Or is there a hybrid? Says, what's his name? Paul McGann, right?
Yeah, like, right.
Half human on his mother's side, the human, half human hybrid coming in.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, it doesn't have to mean a literal, physiological hybrid. Mm-hmm. It can also mean that he has spent so much time away from Gallifrey. Some 2,000 years before the several billion that happened in this one particular episode. Longest episode ever, by the way.
Yeah, true. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
You know, it could mean that, he spent so much time away, more than any other Time Lord probably, and he spent so much of it in the in the company of humans and on Earth that he has taken on these traits. I mean, obviously last season he was a mess.
Yeah. But
he still, he takes on stuff. Is, Clara's just been, taken away from him. And, there are so many, in everything we've seen of Gallifrey and Gallifreyans, they're always so distant, almost Vulcan-like in a lot of ways, and they consider humans to be a subspecies.
Yeah, you just went real quiet, Marcus. you blew out and then you blew the phone.
I'm on my phone, and I think, I keep on getting Facebook messages from friends in the UK who are up way too early.
Or up too late, yeah.
Yeah. That's the thing. He, he's taken on, he protects the humans. He loves the humans. He loves it. He loves what we are capable of becoming. And who knows, maybe one day we'll actually fucking do it. But, this also... it could also be that he is the hybrid of the Doctor and the War Doctor. I mean, there is that version that is out there that is unlike any Doctor before. I mean, I think there are so many plays on the hybrid thing. It could be, it's an amalgamation of all these, 12 regenerations. He's 13, by the way. He's not 12.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, sure. This is correct, yeah.
All his previous regenerations, I think there's so many things there that can make a hybrid, because we all evolve and take on different characteristics and traits from those around us. So we all become hybrids in a way. Mm-hmm. That's my dissertation on Doctor Who Sociology 101.
No, I actually kind of totally agree with you. I don't ever think for a minute that the BBC or Moffat or anybody is going to ever acknowledge the, in an official capacity, ever acknowledge the half human on my mother's side thing ever again. I know Sean has opinions on that. I'm sure he'll have for us here in a second. But yeah, I was just goofing around by mentioning that, because I so vehemently think that I don't actually think it's a terrible idea. If that's what they want to go with it, if they have a good way to go with it. But also, I don't think that that's something they want to address. Not in that way. Not in like the actual physiological context. If they are going to talk about it as like as a metaphorical hybrid thing, I think that's a fine way of addressing it. Especially if Capaldi like incorporates the Paul McGann line into that explanation and like says that he meant it as a metaphor from the beginning, because that lets them like smooth out that little wrinkle in continuity once and for all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I just hope that if they do go through with this asinine half human thing, they don't make him half Scottish.
So a couple of things I found that were really interesting was that the Veil, this monster, was able to somehow disable the Doctor's regeneration, right? He burned the Doctor alive, I guess, turned him into dust. Totally leads me to the whole Gallifrey and the Return of the Time Lords kind of feel that we've been, things have been kind of starting to pop up over the last few episodes. So I thought that was really interesting. And feeding off of that was how the Doctor figured out everything. We see how the Doctor thinks, and that in his moments of pause and trying to figure stuff out, he's inside the TARDIS. He's writing on the chalkboard. We saw this with the chalkboard last season. It just kind of it didn't play very well. This season, we see it with the chalkboard a lot more often. And now the chalkboard is in his head, and he's figuring things out, and it's Clara talking to him in his head and still helping him, still guiding him, still telling him to win. Always assume you're going to win. Always assume you're not going to die. I think those are some of the words that that she mentioned in there. But I think it was actually assume you're going to survive. Always assume that. So I thought that was brilliant. You see the Doctor figure things out in the TARDIS, which is actually all inside his head.
There's actually, that's something they borrowed, I think, from Sherlock.
Okay.
The memory palace, yeah.
The memory palace. And it may have come up in, psychology before that or whatever. There's definitely a connection there. I think one of the interesting things is I don't think the Doctor dies in 7 billion times. Mm-hmm. I don't think it's a case of suspending his regeneration. I think this is, the whole idea of this being the confession dial, that, he is supposed to be there, because obviously dimensions are, trans-dimensional mm-hmm. time, wibbly-wobbly is the Time Lord's forte. I think it's almost like not a final resting place, because obviously we've seen with Moffat before and where, on Trenzalore, on what's going on. But I think this, there's going to be something explaining this. That I don't think he dies, because he can't be a fucking copy that's been going through this for 2 billion years. Mm. I mean, one, it would drive anybody insane, especially when you figure it out that it's like, oh my God, all right, everything's moved to 12, 2 billion years. And, because it's inside this dimensional torture chamber, it could be a case of he doesn't, it's not a question of him actually, dying. It's just everything resetting, including him. And what he thinks is dying, given the energy boost, is just him being sort of like healed and put back, through the end, like a maze. But I got to say, this is, especially with the last 5 minutes, this has been the best Capaldi. You can't really go wrong with it. It was certainly the best Moffat. I think this is probably even better than Day of the Doctor for me. My favorites, because it got Tom Baker in it. I gotta say, I gotta give the props where it's due. It's certainly one of the best episodes of Doctor Who. I mean, it screams that Tom Baker era, the mid-section, the gothic horror version. It was like a horror film in a lot of ways, that the psychology of this shuffling thing that takes an hour to traverse to get to you, and he's tapping out the seconds as he goes, and then the dig. I mean, you know, some great one-liners in there. The whole gardening.
Yeah,
I mean, there were some great, it had some great smile moments. And it's one of those ones that you have to rewatch after you watch it the first time. It's very much, it's like The Sixth Sense, because you watch that movie again after you find the twist in that, there's a bunch of stuff you pick up on again. So I heartily recommend, if people haven't gone and watched it twice, mm-hmm. you should definitely do that, because, you know, one of the other things you mentioned, the veil. The veil is actually, it's not the first time the veil's been in Doctor Who related stuff.
Oh, really?
They were in the Sarah Jane and...
Okay.
So I'm wondering if the veil is not necessarily a species, you know, in this concept. This, because again, this is the Doctor's own designed kind of thing, I think, that, you know, his nightmare, and it could be that the veil, you know, the veil falling over his life. I think it could be a symbolic thing there.
Sure,
you don't even see, you know, because when it collapses, it's got all cogs and everything in it.
Mm-hmm. That's true, yep.
Yeah, I got to say, so happy that, you know, he didn't get out of that fucking thing, and it was a bunch of Daleks on the Missy.
Yeah.
Sitting there.
I was genuinely surprised that was not the case, because, like, I figured, like, it was just, they were going to burn that bullet so soon. Mm-hmm. I just really assumed that was going to be the case here. Because they do it every season, like, it's just, like, especially with Moffat around, it's just been, like, fucking Daleks have to fucking show up at some point in the last stretch. And no, it's Gallifrey, and maybe the Daleks will still show up yet. Like, maybe they'll try to invade Gallifrey. Maybe that's Missy's plan, is like, hey, I know where Gallifrey is. Maybe I'll show you where it is and we can invade there. Mm. The Doctor has to repel them or something, maybe. But having the Time Lords be the, like, the final stump here was real good.
Yeah, I hope that, you know, when we get to see who's behind it, I hope, like I said, I hope it's someone like Rassilon or, you know, another mm-hmm. time. I mean, it would be great if Timothy Dalton was back, but it doesn't...
Yeah, who knows about that, yeah.
They're
going to have Daniel Craig take over.
Well, no, they have to go with Pierce Brosnan.
Oh, yeah, Pierce Brosnan first.
Have to go Brosnan next. So, yeah, great. Love it. Fantastic. Three thumbs up. And there is another
piece. I don't want to know about that third thumb.
There is another piece that you guys obviously didn't see, but I saw just before I came on the podcast. You want me to interject it right now?
Sure.
They released the first image the promotional image from the Christmas special. It's the Husbands of River Song.
Oh, yes, yeah.
Sean actually mentioned that in our chat right now. He goes, I don't know if we should talk about it in case spoilers, but yeah, the Husbands of River Song. Yeah,
I can't see the chat from the song.
What's that?
I mean, she married all of the dead doctors that died in the confession mm-hmm. dial, so that's going to be, you know, it's going to be a great callback, you know, to that classic episode of Doctor Who, Heaven Sent, that we've all had a lot of time to ruminate on.
She's got 2 billion plus doctors to renew vows with.
That's probably all we actually need to say about this, that, you know, that episode, because thankfully the Christmas episodes tend to exist outside the you know, the main event. Long continue.
I'm certainly happy to see Alex Kingston back too, by the way. I still love Alex Kingston. I still love River Song, and I wasn't super happy with, like, the quote-unquote conclusion that we got with her, with, like, the dead River on Trenzalore and everything like that. I didn't think that was a very satisfying end to her arc.
So I want to talk to Sean right now, because Sean has been fairly quiet this whole time while we've been ruminating. And Sean, what are your thoughts? What are your feels for this episode?
I thought it was terrible.
What?
Just like the most disappointing episode of Doctor Who I've ever seen.
I think he is, the word is fucking with you.
Yes.
No, this was Who perfection. I mean, not only is this the best of the Capaldi run, I think it's top five of New Who. Really do. I would put it up there with Blink. I would put it up there with Girl in the Fireplace, you know, and, you know, Midnight and stuff like that. So just phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. A couple things that you guys had said that I just wanted to touch on, because I don't think there's too much I can say that hasn't already been said, because I think we all are just unanimously in agreement on this one. I could be wrong. I don't think the veil here is in any relation to any of the species that kind of came on other parts of the Who-niverse. I feel like it was kind of mentioned early on that this whole thing was just sort of like a treasure trove of traps and monsters for him. based on his own, you know, psychological memories and fears and stuff like that. So I think the Veil was actually just a childhood nightmare version of something that he saw when he was a kid. I think he mentioned that it was an old time lady that took a really long time to die and flies around her and was still walking around when they thought they should be dead and stuff like that.
And she literally, or he didn't he say that they literally like threw a veil over her, but the flies came anyway or something, right. Something along those lines. And that's what I kind of assumed.
Some terrifying imagery from little young doctor time lord boy.
Even just in description, the idea of like this dead body covered in flies, doctor seeing that as a kid was a pretty messed up image.
And it was really just really intense. A lot of the symbolism, a lot of the messages here. I get the kind of feeling that folks have about the whole teleport and him dying over and over again, and whether or not that actually happened. I'd like to interpret it as it did, because I feel like that's what really gives this episode all of its weight and all the gravity. Of course, it also now goes back throughout Who that pretty much any time he's ever been teleported or transmatted or whatever, it's a clone, so it hasn't really been the original Doctor in God knows how long. But like all the Who-y sort of science-y stuff aside, like that twist at the end, that the gravity of that, the sacrifice he's making and refusing to die in a situation where it's clearly designed for him to confess and then be done, is just huge. And it's really it's beautiful, it's poetic, it's also super dark, right? Like when he realizes the skull and what he has to do and how he spends a day and a half crawling up to die and reset the whole process and do it over and over and over again for 1,000 years, 7,000 years, 1,000,000,000 years. Like that is unbelievable for Who. I mean that is just next level stuff. And it really packs a punch that the episode, not to say it wasn't great up to that point, but that really just brings it all together and really helps it transcend into like the upper echelon.
The tenacity behind, you know, whichever way you interpret it, like the tenacity behind the act of doing that, you know, for that amount of time by himself, like that, to me, that doesn't seem like, I can't see like Matt Smith having done that by himself. With Matt Smith, we would have had a scene where he tried to do it and then he would have gotten halfway up and like almost given up. And then he would have had a vision of Amy Pond or somebody like that would have like helped him through. So something along those lines would have happened. But I don't see like, you know, I could see other doctors doing it, but I couldn't see like, I don't see that being like a just Doctor Who trait. Whereas I can see that being like a Peter Capaldi trait. Like I can see that like defining part of him.
To that point, I don't think any of the previous doctors, at least in this era, could have done that performance. I think this is designed 100% to show Capaldi's chops. Not to say he hasn't already been cemented with, you know, the Zygon speeches and a couple other things this season, but to really, really, really just elevate him as...
Hey, guys, like, did you know that Peter Capaldi was fucking amazing? Just in case.
Well, but here's the thing is like now, you know, assuming people don't necessarily care about the continuity or whatever, I feel like there's stories in every doctor's run, every actor's run, where we can point people to and be like, oh, you want to get into Doctor Who? Here's who you check out from Matt Smith, or here's who you check out from David Tennant. You know, Christopher Eccleston has, you know, the gas mask kid and everything like that, or Dalek, whatever. This is one of the ones you just immediately just like, oh, yep, Capaldi. Like, that's the one heaven sent. Like, go and watch this guy. And watch what he can do, and that's why people like love this show. That's why people love Capaldi. That's why people think Capaldi's one of the best that's had the role in the last 20 or 30 or 50 years. It's stuff like this, and this was just a tour de force, right? I mean, there's nothing like this has ever really been done, at least again, New Who, like ever. So it was just phenomenal. It was phenomenal, and to see him go inside his head and show how he gets out of what would be seen as like, oh, easy outs for the doctor because it's the doctor, and see him work through it and see himself talk himself through it and give him the motivation with, you know, in this case, unfortunately, the ghost of his dead companion who he constantly wants to show off to in real life. And when she's there, now she's not, but he can't get over that. Like to see it slow down and you know, like I think Marcus said, borrowed a little bit from Sherlock with a Whovian twist on it. It was just so cool. Like it peels back these layers of the doctor that we've never seen before. And it's just, everything came together in such a way that like it's perfect Who. Like, this was a perfect episode of Doctor.
I just tweeted out, but I really do think that this is, you know, it's award-winning TV, this episode. And I think, I really do think Capaldi should get at least a look for, I don't want to say an Emmy or whatever, but at least a look for some of these bigger awards. Just absolutely phenomenal, I think. Well,
yeah, absolutely. If any TV award ceremony ever, and he did anything with sci-fi or fantasy, absolutely.
That's correct. Yeah. Let's just say that this will definitely win a Hugo Award or two.
Well, what are the UK guys get? Is it BAFTA? Am I forgetting? Am I confusing that with something else?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
Or is that just video games? Like, I think they include video games, but I think the BAFTA does.
Marcus will have to educate me on his people's strange customs.
The BAFTA is the British Academy of Film Arts, so it covers TV and now interactive entertainment as well. So, he'll be up for a BAFTA. He'll certainly be up for, you know, a bunch of, I'm guessing, awards with regards to. You know, like the Reader's Choice stuff. So yeah, and as he should be. It was a fucking episode.
It's hard to. This is one of those episodes where we got all of our talking done about this episode within like 5 minutes. I mean, the great episodes are difficult to talk. The good episodes are difficult to talk to because what else can you say besides it was
great? I loved it. Beautiful.
But the bad episodes tend to be a lot easier because you can dissect them. And obviously, a couple weeks ago when we had that atrocious the only bad episode of this season, I think. Or I should say the only subpar episode of this season. Up until this point, I'm going to make a bold statement. This has been my favorite of the new Who seasons. So I'm really curious as to how this is going to end. But remember that last year – before the season 8 was even complete, Stephen Moffat gave an interview where he said that he'd already figured out the ending of season 9 and it's going to blow people's minds. It's going to be a cliffhanger ending, it'll blow people's minds. We're at this point, and he's right. Mr. Moffat, I know we've doubted you consistently.
No. Don't you come in here and say before the last minute, you'd be like, all right, guys, now's the time. he has 56 minutes or so still, a whole 56 minutes of TV left to disappoint us.
But what I was to disappoint us. No, what I was going to say is just when we think that we're completely done with Stephen Moffat, he pulls an episode like this out of God knows where.
Before we all climb up inside his butt to give him lots
it's
of
just me. I think it's just me going up his butt.
His strike rate is small. I mean, remember, for everyone like this, or Blink, or Day of the Doctor, we have been through so much shit.
Mm-hmm. Let me tell you, Dolly, about an episode of Doctor Who called Vincent and the Doctor, and when Matt Smith explained to me that the good things don't outweigh the bad things and the bad things don't outweigh the good things, it is totally plausible that he can make a good episode once in a while that does not make up for all the shit that he has poured onto us from his fucking chamber pot of creative ideas back at Cardiff. Like, no.
It's pretty much, what is the word I'm looking for here? It's way better than 8 and 7. So
yeah.
I'm in agreement with you guys that he does more bad than good these days, but when he does good, he knocks it out of the park.
Yeah, he does.
This has been the first episode he has done that has been on a par with his best stuff, like in the Russell T. Davies era. Abso-freaking-lutely. I don't think anybody's going to deny that. Like, it's right up there with Blink and, things that he has done. And I don't necessarily want to say that this doesn't count because, like, he's done bad recently. It's just that, I also just think that his bad doesn't necessarily stop counting because he did good.
This is correct, yeah. I'm going to read a few of the things from our lovely listeners. We did have a few comments this week. I think people are still in shock at this episode because we haven't received as many as the past, but we had a few. First, I want to thank Portia Camille. She tweeted out a photo of her the Bluetooth synced in her car, showing the Lonely TARDIS podcast. It actually looks nice. Really beautiful on the on her car's screen over there, her radio screen, her audio system screen. Let me hop over here to Annalie, good friend, at sublevel 28 says, I'm still trying to recover the mind fragments from last night. Mike Zero at iMike Zero says, "That was a phenomenal episode of Doctor Who. Capaldi at his absolute best. Brilliant writing." Says the Doctor begging to give up, and the memory of Clara not allowing him was great. That's a really good point. There was a part of the episode of the Doctor was sort of he was giving up. Why can't I lose? And that's really interesting because the Doctor's not supposed to lose. He's the one that's always supposed to win, and he does seem kind of tired and drained at having to win every time. So I thought that was a really, really astute point, Mike. He also says the Doctor mourned Clara for billions of years. Put that into perspective more than any other companion. And take that, Rory. You only had a few thousand years to mourn your loved one.
It's really an unbelievable amount of time.
Yeah. Alan Paxton, at Alan_Paxton, says, "Another strong episode despite the usual issues Moffat stories have, but damn if Capaldi didn't have me gripped every scene. The story managed to find its way for a hell of an end. There's a lot of questions to answer come the finale. But we will see what we end up getting. Moffat has pre-cons for dropping the ball in part two is gone past. All in all, I enjoyed it and wait with hope for a satisfying end. Let's hope we get more Capaldi-only episodes in the future. I look forward to Annoyed Gamer's thoughts."
I don't know who's Annoyed Gamer. What's the...
Yeah, who's that? Who's that dork?
We don't talk about video games on this podcast.
I think that's this week's... That's Marcus Moffat fan, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Oh, okay. Did he send us a tweet for us to read on the air? Marcus Moffat fan 86?
Marcus Moffat fan... We're going to have to start that...
Marcus Moffat fan 45.
I think Moffat fan 45 is just Marcus. Yeah, you're right.
You guys are about as funny.
We love you, Marcus. So really, it's hard to talk about this episode because it was a fun, amazing episode. I mean, I'm still
how about when he goes and the transition, which again is such a credit to Capaldi, transitioning from this fiery, angry, "I'm going to find you. I'm going to stop you. You don't know what you're dealing with, Doctor," in the beginning. To this terrified, "I don't know what to do. Yeah. I can't win. I'm screwed. Oh, God."
That kind of, like, to me, is a really defining, like, Doctor trait. It's just, like, this, like, incredible bravado until somebody pulls a gun, and then he's like, "Okay, well, let me, just give me a second to think my way out of this situation. I'm going to run away and regroup, and then I'm going to outsmart you by the end." And in this case, it took him, you know, several million years to do it, but damn if he didn't.
It was great. It was just, I mean, and then to watch him go through that over and over and over and over and over again, it was just awesome.
Maybe the only good use of a montage in the history of Doctor Who?
I maybe I'd have to think on it, but definitely probably the best. So
it's usually a pet peeve of mine, actually, like on Doctor Who, when they just jump forward like incredible lengths of time, and say like, "Oh, the Doctor's been chilling out for 600 years and just didn't happen to tell anybody about it," and like he was just able to abandon his friend for 600 years, or the idea of like
friends galore.
Yeah, or we've been hanging out, or, you know, me and the Doctor have been tooling around space for, you know, 8 seasons without, like, worth of content. We just didn't ever show it to you. Like, how weird is that? Like,
Big finish.
Yes. Yeah, like, that sort of thing. But then in this one, like, I don't know, like, maybe it was just because we knew the exact events that were going on over and over and over again, and they gave us just enough of a difference with the, like, it's been 7,000 years, it's been 10,000 years, it's been 100,000 years, you know, that stuff. But I don't know, like it didn't feel cheap to me in that way. Like they found that right balance and they used it effectively in a way that I don't think they've necessarily ever done. That's kind of my closing thought, I think.
No, I agree. I was actually going to say that too, the passing of time, but also not having him be 6 billion year, or 2 billion years older or whatever it is.
Right. Yes.
Was very well done as opposed to what they were doing, pretty frequently after a while with Matt Smith.
And I always thought that, I think part of the reason I felt that was a little cheap was, like, I remember, like, the Doctor saying, like, Tom Baker Doctor saying, like, "I'm 600 years old." And, like, you know, it felt like such a piece of the continuity of the character. Like, no, he is 600 years old. He's 900 years old. He's all this because, like, this is the amount of time that has passed for him and stuff like that. But then, like, to just cut out, like, huge chunks of the Doctor's history that just apparently weren't important enough for us to be a part of, I think that was part of the reason. And, like, yeah, so not having him just say, like, oh, I'm also 10 billion years old now. I'm the Doctor. I'm 10 billion. Mm-hmm. Hi. Like, that was smart, I think. That might have been part of it.
I agree. Do you think he remembers anything?
Out of those several billion, no, I don't think so.
He's got to remember at least the last one of them.
Well, yeah, of course. But I mean, like, from his previous clones or teleport clones.
So
he'll have worked out that he died 2 billion years.
Well, he left himself notes. Remember, the arrows.
I took it as, like, once he got to the to the diamond wall, he was like, oh, I get it. Because, like, that's why he's repeating that nursery rhyme every time, like, to sharpen its beak. Like, that is, like, it's when he gets to that door, he realizes, oh, this is what the skulls were. This is who left the message. This is this.
Right.
This.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And I can't imagine he thought, I mean, he seemed pretty shocked when he finally broke through. So I would have to think up till that point, everything was exactly the same. So he understood the clue. He understood what he was telling himself and the skulls and everything. So if not the memories, then at least the context clues to realize what he had probably been through. And then, of course, right. who seemingly put him through that. Because who, boy, did we have a cliffhanger. Yeah. And I said it last week. I said, I hope they know what they're doing, because if they go down this road with all the stuff they've established with them for the past 9 seasons, I really hope they know what they're doing, bringing them back and have prepared the proper way to handle it.
Hmm.
So one of the things that I thought was wonderful is as I strolled through Doctor Who Reddit, somebody had done number crunching for how did you guys see that? For how long it would take to actually clear that wall with the strength, with punches and stuff. He says, okay, this is by Professor Adonis C. Nutt. And he writes, quick number crunch on the wall. Let's assume the cycle repeats 100 times a year. That's including the 1.5 days crawling and a bit more than that to get to that point each time, right? Because he's eating, he's sleeping, getting out.
Right.
Because this gives us about 200 billion cycles overall. Just remember, because he had about 2 billion years. That's 10 billion per foot wall, right? Per foot of wall, because it was 220 feet of material, or about 0.3 meters. So 1 billion for 30 millimeters, 1 million per 30 nanometer, or, you know, 1,000 per 30 nanometers, whatever. Since the distance between atoms in diamond is 1.54 angstroms, which is 0.154 nanometers. So there. Now, again, this was meant to be stronger than diamond by 200 times, whatever. 400 times. It says, let's use that as a rough guide, since we can't get the number for a fictional material. So the Doctor went through something like 5 cycles, maybe 50 punches to get one atom closer. So I thought that was amazing. He would have to punch 50 times, 5 actual cycles, if he got 10 punches in each time, to get one atom closer.
Jeez. That's awesome. Yeah, that's great. I really appreciate that. Like that,
I just love that somebody took the time to do science to Doctor Who. Yeah,
I'm 100% serious. I think that is probably one of the coolest things any of our listeners has ever sent in for us.
Yeah, well, no, that wasn't for us. That was on Reddit.
That was on Reddit. Oh well, then fuck that guy.
Well, we can pretend, Steve. We can pretend that.
No, the illusion's ruined. Dally had to ruin my his birthday gift to me. Yeah, had to be ruined.
Well, this was the best. This was an amazing birthday gift from the Doctor. I gotta say, that was. I think both Marcus and I can agree that if there was anything that, this worked out really well. It was just such a fucking good episode. I can't stop glowing. I'm gonna go watch it. It's 11 o'clock right now in the Eastern on a Monday night, and instead of watching the end of a football game or Raw or whatever. Or Jessica Jones, I'm gonna rewatch Doctor Who because it was that good. It was that good.
Mm-hmm.
This is one of those episodes that I'm probably gonna keep on either keep on my DVR so I can watch it anytime, or I'll buy the DVD of it or Blu-ray of it. Although now looking back, God, I would love for them to release this in theaters. How awesome would it have been to have the two parts of this episode in theaters, right? This episode
would have been really disappointing when you got to the end. You're just like, wait, what happens next?
What? Wait, what? I got to go back home and watch the rest.
Mm-hmm. That would have been a really strange decision to put the first two parts of a three-parter in theaters, Dally. I don't know. I mean, I'm certainly not going to go back and watch this fucking episode because I just got done reviewing games for 2 weeks. So I'm going to go watch Supergirl and Jessica Jones and, like, try to do something new with my life for the first time. But absolutely still probably going to go back and watch it eventually. and, you know, maybe we go back and watch this season again sometime and talk about it. I don't know.
Definitely. And we're going to have a lot to talk about over the next, obviously next week, and then maybe we'll do like a full season wrap up the week after. We're going to get Susan back on. We'll get into the Christmas episode. This is the week after that. There's a lot of Who yet to be seen. I mean, we're really 2 weeks away from the Christmas episode, right? We have, or I should say 3 weeks away from the Christmas episode, right? We have this coming Saturday as the season finale. Then we have a break, and then we have maybe like a week and a half later, we have the Christmas episode. So. Yeah, I think we can probably get a lot of stuff done over the next couple weeks here.
Yeah.
Cool.
We'll have to just have a special episode where we just talk about the Jessica Jones because that's the only way I'm going to force myself to watch all of that show. Not that it's bad or anything like that. I just, you know, I need to fucking go and get there. I need to go do that.
You guys are all over the place. I'm sitting here just trying to figure out at what point and what Time Lords we're about to deal with. Are we dealing with the crazy Time War Time Lords or what? Because we had a doctor who was hell-bent on finding them, and now he seems to be hell-bent on taking revenge.
So, well, I have a feeling – well, so that was the thing you said, Sean. Like, this will be my last thing, I swear. But, like, you said, Sean, that, like, the Time Lords we saw were super, super evil and super bad by the end of the Time War. But they've been off – stuck by themselves in isolation for, like, you know, God knows how long since, like, they got set aside by the War Doctor and the, you know, the three doctors and everything like that. So we have no idea what to expect. Like, these could be completely different kind of Time Lords than we've seen in the past. They're completely different, psychologically completely different.
Excellent.
I didn't even know time was I guess I should have, but when he says they're trapped in a moment in a pocket universe or whatever, I didn't even think about time passing like it would anywhere else.
I love when he was just looking at the stars and figuring out where he was and you know, saying how he couldn't be more than a certain distance away from his location. And I said, oh, that's not right. That's like 7,000 years off. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Okay. Any final thoughts on this? Or let's give our ratings, right? Should we give our ratings before we put the seal on this veil?
What? No. Dally, go away.
Let's start with you, Sean. How many clockwork ghosts do you rate out of five for Heaven Sent?
Can I do 6 out of 5?
Yeah, that's fine.
No, it was great. If you look at it from some bigger picture stuff and some things that kind of are a little wonky in terms of like overall mythology, you know, all of a sudden the confession dial showing up in the hybrid talk or whatever, then whatever. But as an episode, as a self-contained thing of Who, this was perfection. So I can't think of a single reason to knock any points off it.
Cool. Steven?
I mean, it's 5 out of 5. I mean, I've given my quote-unquote final thoughts like 4 times now. It's just, it's going to be, as like Sean said, I think it was Sean, that you're going to look back at this episode and like think that is the quintessential Capaldi episode. I think right now, if I had to choose 2 episodes, it would be this and the Boneless episode, which for some reason I just can't remember the name of. You know, you look at like David Tennant, and I always think like Family of Blood, Human Nature, Midnight, that sort of thing. And yeah, this is on that par for the character of Capaldi. It's hard to even compare the two because they're such different characters and such different doctors. And I think that is what makes this episode work so well, is because it works for Capaldi. It wouldn't work for David Tennant. It wouldn't work for Matt Smith. It works for him.
Mm-hmm. Marcus.
2 billion.
Oh, that was going to be my score.
2 billion punches against a diamond wall, 2 billion years in the making for a decent fucking Moffat episode.
Hey.
Yeah.
No, hallelujah.
It was great. It's going to be hard to top. Mm-hmm. It's on form. I hope, you know, we know that Capaldi's hit his stride. I hope next week Mr. Moffat brings his A game again, because as I say every time, there's a good Moffat episode, like waiting for the other shoe to drop. We still have, I think it's 65 minutes or even 70 minutes next week. It's a longer episode next week.
Oh, really?
I think it's a longer episode. I might be wrong on that. I've been known to be wrong on occasion in the past. But yeah, I think I remember reading that it is a longer episode to finish up because, you know, all singing, all dancing, we are the Time Lords.
It's once more with feeling, but on Doctor Who. Yeah.
Indeed. So yes, I think if Moffat can nail it next week and leave us extremely satisfied, then I will not have another bad word to say for him for at least another week.
Until the Christmas episode. Excellent.
Very generous.
Yeah, I'm going to also give this 2 billion out of 5. This was my favorite episode of this season, of last season, and yeah, it ranks in my top 3, if not my favorite of the new Who completely. There is just so much goodness. It was just, this was all Peter Capaldi. Every Doctor has the moment they become the Doctor. This whole season seems to have been Capaldi's moment, but this episode to me was his moment in just in acting, in general, in the art of acting. Yes, we know he's been a phenomenal actor his entire career, but this episode to me personally cemented just how magnificent he can be when it's just him, when the spotlight, the camera is strictly on him. He delivered, and yeah, I can't speak any more highly of this episode of Capaldi as an actor. He's he is easily one of the top 3 Doctors, I think, and I don't have a fucking fear to say that. And he's,
I think that is fucking crazy based on like the stories that we have had with, like, you know, he's a fine
this
actor.
This season, dude, this season has been awesome.
I think he's gonna cement himself up there, Steve. I think I'm gonna wind up agreeing with Dolly when all is said and done.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think that's fine. I think it's fucking crazy to say that now.
I don't know, man. I mean, he's already elevated some pretty terrible scripts.
Marcus?
He's making a run on the top three. He's not there yet. Okay. I don't think we can judge his excellence until that regeneration hits in 18 months' time. I do think, however, I have a very nasty, sneaky suspicion that he is going to regenerate into a young, skinny boy, which will only help him because it will make his performances stand out even more. No disrespect to the skinny boys we've had in the past. I mean, David Tennant's proven he can do some really good shit. Anybody watching Jessica Jones will tell you that because he scares the shit out of me as Kilgore.
Yes. Holy shit.
He's delivering an unreal, maybe the best Marvel villain performance out of the Marvel MCU right now.
I will follow you on.
That's the Doctor I wanted in those 3 specials in the Tennant's exit. That was the Doctor Triumphant or the Time Lord Triumphant. That's the Doctor I wanted to see, just veering off the rails before redeeming himself, because I think that would have been a great finale for him. And then, of course, we've got, you know, Matt Smith is another skinny boy, totally wasted in Terminator Genesis, but will be back on our screens with Pride and Prejudice and Zombies in the new year.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. That's right.
Yeah. But yeah, I'm gonna have to unfortunately book. But I gotta say, I'm looking forward to this Saturday. It's gonna be a good one, providing no one fucks it up.
Yes, yeah, please don't screw it up.
Yeah, I'm actually gonna be. I'll be in San Fran during PSX.
Me too.
I may need to find my way to a television Saturday night. My flight's at 11 o'clock at 12 o'clock Saturday night, midnight.
If I had known you guys were going to all be flying out for this thing, I would have come with you. Like,
you
I'm
should
gonna
still
wait.
Go, Stephen. I have a hotel room available.
I'm going to book a flight 5 minutes in advance. Yeah, okay.
You don't understand how cheap they are right now.
Really?
What's that?
Do you have DirecTV, Dally?
No, I don't.
Okay, well, I mean, a lot of the cable providers now have the app where you can actually record stuff to your DVR, log in, and watch.
Oh, yeah. I have Comcast, so unfortunately that's not going to...
You probably have a hand crank powered by a gerbil running around, in a treadmill, so sorry about that.
Like, Comcast would give them a gerbil.
Oh no, he has to. Well, it's actually he's leasing his own gerbil.
Yeah, that comes separate. You have to go, like, you have to run over to PetSmart or Petco, whatever. PetSmart's like that TV thing that they show on, like, yeah, TV Land, exactly. Isn't it? Okay.
Oh no, there is PetSmart.
Oh, okay.
You have them over here in the civilized world.
Okay, gotcha. Good. Is it? What do I have then? Petco? Is that a thing?
Whatever. Yeah. Petco is all. Yeah, yeah.
Are they the same thing? Is this a Carl's Jr. situation?
Didn't your neighbors trust you to feed their cats?
Cats are easy. They basically feed themselves. If you like, just tear open a bag, leave it on a counter, they're fine for a week.
You put basically defrost it. Put a pile of steak on the floor to defrost, and they can just help themselves, right?
Yeah, exactly. It starts from the edges, so they can only get to it at a little bit at a time. So it's like a time release meal that lasts for several days.
Oh, and can I just say, during recording this podcast, a seismic event occurred.
Oh, did it really?
Steven finally friended me on Facebook.
Whoa! 8 months. 8 months. No, actually, a year and 8 months in the making.
24 hours later, I'm going to delete my Facebook accounts.
So, hey, I have so many Minions memes I can send you.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay. Fair enough.
Lots of games that you want to play with me, isn't that right?
Let's see. Marvel Ultimate Alliance. No, wait, that's a different game. Man, if you want to play some Marvel Ultimate Alliance, though, I'll go dig out my 360 and we'll get to going.
You can play the Doctor Who game via Facebook. The
match. Yeah.
Oof. All right. Guys, I gotta go. Okay. I have to get my wife.
Yes.
Up.
All right. Thank you, everybody. Marcus, thank you. Well, where can we find you?
You can find me at Gamer and at No Comments Guest.
There you go. Steven, where can we find you?
Oh, you can find me on Twitter at Stevenstrom, StevenStrom. You can find me on Ars Technica, where I just reviewed Just Cause 3. It's really broken. Xenoblade Chronicles. It requires a lot of patience, but it's real good. You can find me on Dorkly, where I write about... Sorry?
We don't need to read the fucking reviews now.
Exactly. There you go.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Just read the scores. That's not true. We don't have scores on there either. Yeah. Dorkly, IGN, and sometimes PC Gamer. Every once in a while, I'll pop my head in there.
Okay.
You can find Sean at in San Francisco. I guess I don't know at PlayStation. Am I doing the rest of them too?
Is you Sean?
Hi. Hello. Are you done, Steve? You lifted off a lot of things there.
Yeah, I mean, I stopped talking. I assume that's what we did when we were done.
The Lonely TARDIS is now brought to you by LinkedIn.
Yeah, please connect with me on my LinkedIn account. Please endorse me in memes.
You can find I can be found at Sean Norton, SHAUNNORTON.
Okay, I'll do that.
Cool.
We can see our names on the actual podcast info and on the page.
Yeah, so all that fun stuff. Just remind yourselves to rate and review us. It's so important. You know what? Next week we're gonna have hopefully put the finale on our last contest and start a second contest, another contest, which will be maybe I'll have it strictly based off the people that rate and review us on iTunes. But I'll be sending a little joyous holiday fun. So stay tuned for that. That's it. Somebody sing us out.
Happy birthday to you. Happy birthday to you.
Oh, thank you. Much love to you all. Happy
happy birthday, Marcus.
We out. And don't forget Norton and Strom, which sounds like a team of chocolate accountants. You have birthdays coming. And
yeah, we're going to take it. Yep.
Y'all missed my birthday. It was like 3 months ago.
Mine was like a month and a half ago.
Well, you know what? I know, Steven, I know where you live.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And Mr. Norton, I know where you work.
And I will see Mr. Norton this weekend, Marcus. So I'll make sure to give him a wedgie or something. I don't know.
Yeah, you might see him.
You want to give me a noogie while you're at it?
A noogie as well, yeah. All right, everybody. Let's ease our way out. See you guys. Have a wonderful evening.
Bye. 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 Bye.